From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. This is McBride and Brennan with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on today's News Talk. TNT. TNT Radio.
Welcome to McBride and Brennan. I'm Major David McBride, military whistleblower, and we have a fantastic show today, maybe our best show. A few surprises. We have Daniel O'Connor, a 26-year CIA veteran, and exactly the sort of person I have been trying to get on the show. We probably take 26 hours to get through all your stories, but I want to also hear about your best-selling book, A True American Patriot, which had a fantastic write-up, but none other than Secretary of Defense Robert Gates. And I want to go into a little bit of detail to talk about the qualities of a hero. I mean, this is quite important that you obviously you can. There's a fair bit of truth that can. Sometimes you can get more truth in fiction than you can in nonfiction, and I want to talk to you about the qualities of your hero, your protagonist. Anyway, tell us about when you first joined the CIA as much as you can tell us. Anyway, and we want to run through that pretty quickly, because it would take too long.
Sure, no problem at all. I after being with the agency for 26 years, I decided to. At that time, I had been working for 5 different directors of Central Intelligence, depending on what time of the year it was in, and most of the time they have 2 years or 3 years. So I was responsible for their safety. Writ large, and most people don't realize that the directors of Central Intelligence actually go out internationally much, much more than what people realize. So myself and the teams that I've had over that time frame had to make sure that everything was just right with regards to going from country to country. Typically, we would have 10 countries that would have to hit in about 12, 13, 14 days. So we're lucky if we had 3 hours sleep in terms of how much. And the deputy directors of Central Intelligence are also part of my responsibility at that time. So that's what I would mention to you.
Yeah, no, it's a big responsibility. It's something I would hate myself because... You never get any sleep because there's always one thing, you know, it's the one thing you didn't do, which is going to be the problem. I'm a big picture person myself. I like to have the plans, and I need to work with someone like yourself because you're obviously a details guy because, indeed. And also you have to have a lot of stress because I can only imagine. You know, it would be that one time where something wasn't done, when catastrophic results, and you spend rest of your life worrying about it. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the book, and because I think it will reveal a fair bit about your own archetypes and your experience. What's the plot line of the book?
Plot line of the book is what's happening in the world today, to a large degree. And one thing, I'll mention this first, because I'm not sure that you may be aware of it, but about 2 days ago, 3 days ago, I had an individual, there's a group here in the U.S. is called the Cipher Brief, and I have a book review, True American Patriot novel, and this individual was reviewed by Kenneth Declava. So he did a long piece on the book, and I can be happy to send this to you, or get you. You could just pull it up, and I'll give you how. But anyway, his take on the book was that it's exceptionally well done, and that is really. And he's a very learned and successful individual himself. But with this the cyber brief, there's a whole list of people that do, well, what I would refer to as book reviews. And I was very pleased because it's only been about 2-3 days ago. But and we've had the book out now. It's 16 May. I can pass this on to you if you're interested for your readers, is what I'm talking about. Now, it'll let them know.
Well, we've got a special guest here today because now that my co-host, Robert Brennan, I'm not sure where he is. We seem to play tricks on each other, but I got a stand-in co-host, a fellow journalist, Rosie Kelly, who has been all around the world and has done a lot of very interesting things talking about spirituality and soul, and she's going to ask you a few questions herself in lieu of not having Robert here.
That would be fine. I would look forward to that.
Daniel, it's an absolute pleasure to join you today.
Likewise, yeah.
So I am fascinated by your just introduction there and talking about the logistics of traveling to so many countries and being responsible for some very important people. I have to confess, I'm a mum, and I've traveled with my children right around the world. I wonder if there may be some similarities of having to look after people. I guess I'm fascinated by what goes on behind the scenes and just how you must be a bit like a duck, you know, smooth on the surface, but the feet are pedaling underwater a million miles an hour, and just how much work goes into things in order to make it look smooth.
Mm-hmm. There are two points I would share with you on that. One is that when I was doing the work with them, I had to have people that were really talented about it, and they were very good about it. Male, female, didn't matter to me. And we were very successful at that, and so much so that even the officers that I was responsible for, separate from the DCI and DDCI, it was very encouraging because none of them got killed either. So a lot of that with respect to what you mentioned, it has to do with getting out front before anything. So we go overseas, we'll be in 10 different countries, and we'll only be there for maybe 7 days. But we have teams that go out that get everything all set. And if it's not just perfect, like you're describing before, then we make changes. We may switch around, this kind of thing.
Right? So I guess it is really interesting that you mentioned so many countries in very short time frames. Mm-hmm. And you're not just dealing with systems that are familiar to you. Every country you'd go to, you'd be trying to navigate your way through foreign systems with foreign teams on the ground. And that requires pretty incredible communication skills, I imagine.
Yes, it does. And I would say two more things. One is that when we landed at any location, we not only had an inner circle of my own guys and gals, protecting the director and deputy directors, but each country has their own take. And whether we can be with them and not be too worried about who they are, contrast to the exact opposite, where it's a hot zone. We're going in, we're getting out as soon as possible. So there's that part. One thing that I find very interesting with you is that you said you've traveled an extensive amount. And that matches up pretty close, I believe, to what I've experienced in my life. And it's much easier for me to pin, you know, 10 or 15 countries that I've never seen, but all the others I have. And I've been there in times that are hot, and we have to move our people quick. So, you know, people say Hollywood stuff, and they say it's such silly stuff with Hollywood, but there's actually not so silly.
No, not so silly at all. I mean, we've all watched some pretty sensational, you know, films and documentaries about what it's like, but the reality, I'm sure there are actually some truths in the fiction to the reality that you have seen and experienced when you're on the road and on the ground. I don't imagine you can share too many personal stories about it, but perhaps the experiences and maybe even some of the personal challenges. I mean, how do you overcome fear or a lack of trust in those you're working with in order to remain calm?
Okay. Well, I'll start with this line. It says, no classified information available. once I left the agency, that's something that they keep. And they'll let you know if you're doing anything that is not appropriate. And so that's just a line that I use with people when they're first thinking about it. With myself and the time that I've been with them, I've spent so much of my career with the different directors of intelligence and deputy that for me, I was one of nine children. I grew up in the Bronx of New York. And I learned a lot of tough stuff during that time frame of growing.
And so you've almost been born into the role that you're so good at. You know, you've got this ability to exist in a bit of chaos, but one of nine children and from the Bronx. That's pretty impressive. So in terms of translating, you know, moving and doing that transition from your role within the CIA to becoming a novelist, mm-hmm. what's scarier?
I'm sorry, what's what?
What is scarier? What's harder?
What's scarier? Well, I can mention to you. All right. Well, I did not find this. I wouldn't say it wouldn't be. What hasn't been challenging? It's been challenging. But the way I comport myself and how I think, because of what I experienced when I was very young, it became something that I'm very at ease with, and a lot of the people that work for me, that was a portion as well. And so you end up having teams that are fully prepared for any kind of situation. And I was overseas. I've been to many of our embassies and living there for periods of time. And I would mention to you that twice, two instances where a director of the CIA, depending on which one I'm talking about, but they called me back after I'd been in the embassy for about a year. And they let me know at first when I go back to the office, you get called, you come pretty quickly. And, I had mentioned, so perhaps it wouldn't be difficult. They must have somebody they want me to talk to or something like that. And, who they wanted me to talk to is me, because they said, you're staying, you're not going back. So several of the directors, felt they required it of myself. And
well, that speaks volumes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's very.
So in terms of your novel,
yes,
there'd be so many people who have aspired to writing something along the lines of what you've achieved. But I'm imagining that your novel is not entirely fictitious. There'd be a great deal of personal experience and truths in your novel. Was it an interesting process in terms of writing about experiences you've had, but turning that into a fictitious tale?
Mm-hmm. I think that one way to describe the book and what's happening in the world around us right now, terrorism, espionage, U.S. military, and humor. When you're doing a book, it's good to have some humor, especially when things are challenging and grateful. When I retired from the agency, a lot of this was just in the back of my brain. And now I have a large brain. But I was able to use it for the book. And with regards to when I first started thinking about the book, and then I started actually making some moves, paragraphs and that kind of thing, sitting down. I found the U.S. military and And like I had mentioned to you before, when I was working, we had about a very short period of time, we actually get something to rest for a while. And the U.S. military, as I was going through the book, I realized that they too are, only they are not, don't have the possibilities of doing it for short periods of time, which is what we were doing when we're running around overseas. For them, when they're sent out, the United States has 125 bases, U.S. military bases around the world. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee you that the vast majority of those members are sleeping about 3 hours a day.
Wow.
Yeah. And because it's busy and with the way things are today with all around, it's getting much tighter and much more concern.
No doubt. Look, sleep is overrated, really, isn't it? Look, I will let David get another word in just a second, but my final question for you is, I know this is where David's hoping to go and to ask you as well, but really, if your book is to achieve a particular purpose, you are in such a unique position that you can really tell. You can tell a story, you can spread a message, and it comes from a place of experience and truth. So if you were to just give a description of what you were hoping to achieve in writing this book, what would your answer be to that?
My answer would be that it's proven to have been what I was hoping it would be. I find that, I would say at least in the last 3 to 5 years, from my own experience and nothing more, I watched North Korea, South Korea, I watched Xi Jinping in China and Putin in Russia. And back 3 years, 4 years ago, I think both countries, the Chinese and Russia, they, I think, looked at our country and said, we can take them. We can annihilate them.
Mm.
And they didn't realize the level and depth of our expertise in terms of what's happening inside when you're doing a lot of work. And so I think they're quite surprised in the last year. Certainly Putin is. And Xi Jinping is a different category, and he's been trying to take over. He's, in my perspective, he on one side of a coin, he's a brilliant man. I really do think that he's very smart. On the other side of the coin, I think that he doesn't care about any of his people. That's the impression. I've been to China several times, and I'm quite moved by the fact that what he's most caring about, which is an Asia type of thing, is to save face. Mm-hmm. That's the single most. So, for example, with regards to Taiwan, and so close that they are, the Chinese want that area very much. Mm-hmm. It's more built around his ability to save face, so the CCP can't move him out.
Well, I think Australia and the US may have a lot in common there, in that some eyes are watching, and there's a great amount of work being done to protect Australian territory, particularly throughout the South Pacific, mm-hmm. on that exact topic that you've just mentioned. So it really will be very interesting, and I really appreciate what you were saying about the power of your story, in that no one wants to be underestimated, and it sounds like there's going to be a really great read in that. I can't wait to get my hands on it and dig in. But as I said, I will let David get another little bit of a word in. And Joyce, Daniel, it's been a pleasure chatting with you today.
Likewise, very much so, very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for that, Rosie.
Yeah.
And
First she was a backup guest, then she was a backup co-presenter, now she's taken over the show. Anyway, that's all right. That's what happens. The understudy takes over. But
that understudy is very bright, I think. That understudy is very bright.
Yeah, exactly. She's a little bit too bright for her own good. But I think we better have an ad break, and we will come back and talk some more.
You should hear what Steve Malzberg is talking about.
Do I think Trump is an idiot a lot of the times? Absolutely. Did he do wrong things? Absolutely. Yeah. But what we're seeing now, 37 counts, any one of which, if he was found guilty and sentenced to prison, could put him there for the rest of his life, is nuts.
Yeah, well, it's certainly precedent-breaking and an abuse of discretion, a double standard. It's a laundry list of things, all from an administration whose entire pitch during the entire campaign in 2016 is, we have to return to normalcy. We have to stop the insanity. We have to stop the partisanship. The current president at the time, Donald Trump, is a dangerous person because he's doing things that have never been done before, and almost like a police state. You know, he's a dangerous person. Yet it is in fact Joe Biden doing all the things that he tried to convince the American public to vote for him to stop Trump from doing.
Steve Malzberg on TNT Radio. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. If you're talking about it,
the United States of America should never, ever default on its debt.
We're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to McBride and Brennan. I'm Major David McBride, military whistleblower, and we have a very special guest with us, Daniel O'Connor, 26-year CIA veteran who's been everywhere. He hasn't just been everywhere, he's taken other people everywhere. And I'm also joined by co-presenter Rosie Kelly, a journalist and soul professor. And so, Daniel, what I want to know, and I don't want you to spoil your book, the ending, but does the good guy, does he get close to saving the world, put it that way?
Not yet. we're going to wait to see exactly how things are and what's really good. I mean, it's amazing to me that the situation that we have between China, Russia, North Korea, it's just astounding. And you could go on for quite a while. So what I found with the book is that there would be what I would call windows of time. And in the 2 years that it took me to write the book and all, there were periods there where I was just looking out and thinking, hey, well, things will change enough so that it won't be as bad as it seems. And as I sit here, I don't know that that's correct. This is really bad right now. We're very worried about World War III. We're really worried about China, Russia, North Korea, they are buttons that could be pushed that can, we're certainly having a change in world order at a minimum. And one of the things I think in the United States, and I think in your country as well, Xi Jinping is a handful, and he's doing a lot of things that are very on toward. And I think our country and yours are finding the gist of that. And it's getting more and more as if we're going to go into conflict with them. And that's really a terrible thing because that can get brought up bigger and bigger. And it's just... And that's much more serious in many respects than having the Russian fella that thought he was going to just spend a couple of weeks taking care of Ukraine. And now he's realizing that his own people have no, don't want any part of him. There's a ton of people that left Russia because, and many that are still trying to get out, but they really do not like or want Putin to be in the position he's in. And there's a good and bad part of that. The good part is, I think he's right, that the people have the right to do it, and that they, in order for them to live in a good quality life, they have to do this, take him down. The flip side of it is that if and when they do take him down, and I don't have any doubt that it will happen, this is an individual that has, right from the get-go, talked about nuclear activity, nuclear war, nuclear this, nuclear that. And that's a real problem. You don't know exactly how far he'll go. So these are, and I think with North Korea, I think he is Kim Jong-un. He's a puppet for Xi Jinping. I think that he is doing what Xi Jinping wants him to do. And the problem is that he's not wrapped too tight either. So we have, at a minimum, three major issues that have to be dealt with one way or the other. And I think Europe is very concerned about it. So I don't mean to go on, but that's just what it's
good. That's why you're here. you're here. You're our guest. It's because we want to hear what you've got to say. I have a huge amount of respect for someone who's had 26 years experience in the CIA. I mean, you've seen a lot of things, and you've had a lot of responsibility. So your opinion's important. Tell me, though, I've got to ask you this. You say that there are sort of China and Russia, to a lesser extent, North Korea, are threats. Do you, and maybe you can deal with this in your book, but do you also have any concerns about the US and the way it's been run? Do you think that they are aggravating the situation? Some people say that they are. Or do you think their weakness has made things worse? I mean, there are people that say that the US is part of the problem, but it doesn't sound like you're one of them. Tell us what your thoughts about that are.
I think we're not in good terms these days. And, you know, they talk about 100 years ago there compared to now. And I don't know that anyone that doesn't feel as if it's true. And that changing a world order is much to do from the United States as it is with any other country. And I think there's a real push and pull between the people that live in pretty much in the Midwest of the United States, and then you have the two on the one side and the other. And a lot of them are wondering whether there's going to be some type of civil warfare as a result. And these are things that you would normally hope to never have to do while you're having tremendous danger on the outside. So I think your point is very well taken. And I wish that we could find a future president that it doesn't really matter to me about whether he's Democratic or Republican or she. Or, you know, I wish that the individual could be a little bit younger and would have a little bit more mental ability than what I think we currently are doing.
And No, that's fine. You're allowed to speak your mind. We don't self-censor on McBride and Brennan. Kelly, we talk straight, because that's, as you said, that's how the people do it. And that's one of the things that I bemoan about our own country. And I think the US is the same. We no longer mean what we say and say what we mean. And that should be an important thing. And I think you're right about the age thing. We used to laugh, and you can see just when it comes down to hypocrisy, we used to laugh at the Soviet leaders in the 80s and the 70s, Brezhnev and all those guys, and one of them would die because he was 80-something, and then he'd be replaced by someone else who was, you know, a much younger man, 81 or something. And we used to think that was hilarious. And now a lot of the times it's funny how you've got to be careful what you say. We saw that in Afghanistan too when back in the 80s, and the people we called the Mujahideen, you were probably there, but sponsoring. Sure. And then the Russians said to us, you understand that these sort of hardline extremists don't like capitalism any more than they don't like communism, and they will fight you eventually. And we were like, no, that will never happen. So we've got to be careful of sometimes getting caught out with things we say. I totally agree with you about the presidency, and I think that that's it. It the mind boggles. With a country of 300 million people, you've obviously got incredible amounts of talent and leadership and vision. And sometimes you do wonder whether the political system is such that the best people don't get a chance, because there's undoubtedly, there'd be thousands, hundreds of thousands of very, very good people in your, well, you only have to see, that's one of the things you can't really criticize about America. With 300 million people, you have the best artists, you have the best movie makers, you know, you have the best sportsmen. I mean, because it's a big country with a huge amount of competition and a lot of talent, and there's no doubt about it, in just about in any field you cannot be beaten, and good on you. So you would like to see that in politics as well. And I have no problems with the strong America. One of the problems I saw in Australia, in fact, I think it would be good, but it's the corruption which caused me to become a whistleblower in Australia. I'm very much a blue chip sort of person, conservative person, went to the right schools. My father was very well known, and I went to the West Point equivalent and sort of Harvard equivalent, and yet I saw that we were not, our political leaders were using war as a bit of a way to win votes. You know, they didn't care whether we won the war, they didn't care whether we lost the war, they didn't care who got killed, whether it was our own soldiers. And I think that's what made me most frustrated. Our political leaders were prepared to let our own soldiers die if that gave them a boost in the polls. And I didn't think that was good enough, you know, by all means. I mean, when you join up, like you would have joined up, and you would have sworn some sort of oath in the CIA to give your life if necessary for the cause, and you obviously were quite prepared to do that, ready to take a bullet for your boss. But and I was the same in the military. But you don't swear to take a bullet for a politician's popularity, and that is a difference. I think the clash of politics and the security services is one. It needs to stop because, the security services know how to run security, and they know how to keep people safe. But what they don't need is people interfering, a bit like you were saying, on the West Coast and the East Coast, with extreme measures which are just window dressing, you know, like painting the bombs rainbow colors or something like that. I mean, it may look good for votes, but it's not really very helpful for keeping the country safe. Yeah. So, and that's why I wanted to get you on. I want to have more people like yourself on the show, because I've got a huge amount of respect for anyone who dedicates their life to looking after others, basically, which is what you've done. Might have to give Rosie another go.
Well, thank
I won't
you.
Get it back.
Thanks, David. Make a coffee. I want to just touch back on something that you said earlier as well in terms of in China. You see a leader who is an extremely intelligent man, but not necessarily with the right motives for the people of the country. And this conversation now has sort of turned into, well, what drives decision making, whether it be for elections or for decisions around war. I'm curious to know a little bit about, you know, how much of a role does ego play for leadership? And is there a really fine balance in your eyes between having a leader who sees himself as powerful, who may be egocentric, compared to a leader who knows when to put their own personal, you know, sort of drive to the side and put the people first. Mm-hmm. Do you see that as being, you know, a big part of what defines a great leader of any country?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. And I think that in our own country, we're, I think, liking to want to find a leader that, say, becomes president, that will be not because he's a politician and not necessarily because he wants a lot for himself. What we're looking for, in a manner of speaking, is somebody that just loves the country and wants to do right by the country. And with Xi Jinping, with Putin, these are people that I genuinely believe that they are mentally ill. Mm. And I may or not be correct in that. But I think that if they're... With Xi Jinping, he wants to become the leader of the world, and that's something that a lot of people just laugh about, regardless of who or what. But that is what he's looking for: is to rule the world. And interesting to me is that just I think it was maybe 2-3 days ago, he had his 70th birthday. And what was interesting is that no CCP person put together any kind of party at all for him.
No.
Yeah. And I, you know, and then you look at Putin, and Putin's pretty far along. I think he's very close to being a he's close up to the abyss, and that they've tried 45, 47 times to kill him. Mm. And that was when, yeah. So I think your question is an excellent question, and I think it's very real. But the number of people that they kill, not based on it's best for the country, but based on the fact that they don't like someone or someone's disagreed with them.
Or somebody may be getting in their way in that pursuit of, as you've said, ruling the world. And
absolutely.
And that brings us to, you know, well, what is the motivation behind that desire to rule the world? Sometimes they reach a certain level of wealth and then perhaps fame, and then the drive for power kicks in. And perhaps now you're speaking about leaders who are getting along in their age, and so maybe there's a pursuit of immortality and how they'll be remembered. You know,
very well said.
Yeah, but as David knows very well, how a leader is perceived by his country or her country is not necessarily always representative of their position and how they rule. It can very much be a case of how they're portrayed, and the media becomes absolutely vital in that. So it's not necessarily about how independent journalists are portraying the leaders. It's about how much power the politician has within the media, and therefore how the majority of the population perceives that leader. And that can absolutely sway global perspectives on leaders around the world. Would you agree?
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah, I think that with the media, I find the media to be neither good nor bad. And what I mean by that is I think that people that are perhaps a little bit younger and have more to them, that and they may be very much interested in being able to become a president or vice president or whatever. But I think many people that are very well and could be great candidates, they're not, because at certain times the media looks at that spouse either way. and then goes into something that wasn't supposed to be doing, and then to children. And so you have people going into grandmothers and going back in time. And all of this is a way of destroying. And yet, I think with the media, they mean well in their own way. And I think that they too realize that it can't be doing that. And as a this is part of the result of what happens when people that are could be excellent candidates realize that their family is going to be destroyed in some ways. So, you know, this I think there's an aspect to that that's real.
Okay, I'm handing it back to David because I believe there may be an ad break coming up.
Yeah, Rosie takes all the good stuff and makes me do an ad break. Okay, you're listening to Brian and Brennan and fantastic Daniel O'Connor from the CIA and Rosie Kelly. And we'll have an ad break back in 5 minutes. 1 minute.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Of all the things that come out of the mouths of the radical left, this may be the most telling and the most dangerous. Here's Joe Biden.
There's no such thing as someone else's child. No such thing as someone else's child. Our nation's children are all our children.
He has said that many times. It's sick and twisted, and so is this. New Jersey Monitor reports that lawmakers have introduced legislation to lower the age that teens in the state can seek mental health services without parental consent to 13. The bill comes 7 years after then-Governor Chris Christie signed a law allowing children as young as 16 to seek help without their parents' knowledge. Their piece cites studies showing that suicidal thoughts and attempts are up among young people. But folks, why would your kids be able to get any kind of medical treatment, mental or otherwise, without you, the parent, being notified and involved? Because according to the radical left, they are not your kids. They belong to all of us. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Mama, what does the chicken say? Dog. Cat. Giraffe.
Giraffe, really? Giraffe.
You're not going to get it all right. Just make sure you nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Get it right.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Stop the jab and save lives. The COVID vaccine does not work. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to McBride and Brennan. I'm Major David McBride, military whistleblower. And I'm joined by CIA, lifetime CIA agent, Daniel O'Connor, and author of a fantastic book called The True American Patriot. And I'm also joined by journalist and podcaster Rosie Kelly, who is fitting in for Robert Brennan. Now, we don't have too much long left, but what I want to ask you, Daniel, do you believe in God, and did you pray a fair bit of time during the CIA, like for things to turn out or things for not to turn out? And do you believe in the concept of a soul? And I'm particularly interested for my own purposes. Sometimes people think that those of us who work in the security services are all very one-dimensional or whatever, but I certainly did a lot of praying. I still do. And tell me about your relationship with the other world, if you have one.
There you go. I do, and I do believe in God. I do believe that if it wasn't for Him, I wouldn't be in existence. Hi. When I was in the job, there were very dangerous times, very, very difficult, and we had to make it work. And most of all, make sure the principles were taken care of. And part of that is that people that are looking to kill us have to step back. If you put together teams that are well done and they're not about themselves, they're about the objective. And the directors themselves, part of the reason why we have to operate that way is because if they were to take him or her, then that individual is going to be suffering in a way that, you know, they'll be, whether they know God or not, they will be asking for his help. And I think that it's quite interesting that for me, and I know this may sound very unusual, but I had more difficult times when I was growing up than I ever did once I hit high school. And I still find that to some extent, if it's meant for me to go, I go. And it's not going to be something that I'm going to fight. But I'll be talking to God about this for sure. And he'll be telling me what he's going to do. And that's what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, look, I love that. Perfect answer. And I'm the same. I think you can't be a good soldier or a good security person unless you have that, because you have to be prepared to die. And it was, in some ways, we're the opposite to civilians. And it's hard to explain in the sense that you may well have to die at work, and you can't really say, call your union and say, oh, well, you know, how dare the boss make me do that? I mean, that's the job that you sign up for. And while that seems pretty crazy to normal people, I mean, that's, for us, that is part of it. And my heroes when I was young were all people like that, knights and crusaders who went into battle and prayed on their knees. And that was part of it. I must have, and it's a real strength in it. I remember in Afghanistan, because people become very cynical and whatever, but I saw a group of US servicemen kneeling down in a circle and saying a prayer together. And I thought that is so strong, whether you're Christian or Muslim, whatever, to see a group of soldiers that you're might be opposing, but in their combat gear, helmets and everything, get down and pray before they got it. You know you're up against a decent enemy when they do that. And I think that's what and that's one of the things that, I mean, I am a critic of the current US administration. I don't make any apologies for that. But one of the things that I have to acknowledge that there's a lot of Christianity in the US. There always will be. Some people say that that's a bad thing. I don't believe that can possibly be a bad thing. And the problem with China and Russia, it's if you play a game like it's a game of chess and you don't have any kind of concept of soul or good and you're just trying to win and you don't have a God in your life, it can be any type of God, but if you don't have a God in your life, you're not really going to be playing it, the game as well as those that do have a God in their life. And the one thing about it, I mean, that's one of the positives about America, is it is effectively a Christian country. Well, even if there are other religions there, a lot of big Jewish influence, but it's a country where God we trust. It's on you, and that will always be a better, more reliable country, as long as the people aren't corrupt, of course, and they aren't just saying it. But I think that a world run by people who believe in God is going to be better than a world run by people who don't believe in God. But Rosie Kelly's got something to say, I'm sure.
Look, I'm a firm believer in the power of having faith, regardless of any religious denominations. I do think that a sense of faith instills a sense of moral conduct in the way that we treat others. And it's interesting how both yourself and David, Daniel, you've both been in positions where you're facing, you know, a life or death scenario. But I would argue that even if you choose life, you're also faced with a situation that might mean you could live the rest of your life feeling dead inside. Mm-hmm. You know, if you do something that is against your faith or against your moral, you know, belief system. So hopefully people listening today would agree that that the work that you do and people such as yourselves is based on a sense of faith and a belief system that is for the greater good. And I'll be curious to know if that's also featured in your book.
I think that's it's done. Some of the humor that I have in the book, some of the humor that's listed there, is meant to perhaps have someone turn look at another side of the coin. And I think that the numbers of people in the book are not extreme, and so that allows the people that are characters to have some things about them that are a form of peace for and with people. And that's not always something that can be done, but I'm very impressed. In all seriousness, I'm very impressed with both of you, and it is really quite nice to hear such talk. It's the best way I could put it. But I think that the book itself, it's intended to, if possible, to assist with what's happening on in the world. And there's some portions in it that are very military and other angles, portions about terrorism and the espionage. Espionage is very easy because I was with CIA. But the other portions of terrorism and U.S. military, tough stuff. And I think that the book covers that fairly well. And one thing I would mention, too, is that it's a trilogy. And this is the first one I have of this trilogy that I'm going to be doing. And I've already gone pretty deeply into the next one that I'm anticipating. So it'll be, and then the third piece, it will be three altogether. And the third piece is still just in my brain sitting there.
Well, you've certainly proven that that's a large brain. And and you mentioned earlier that that you haven't had a lot of sleep in your career. So I'm not surprised to hear that the trilogy is on the way.
That's great.
Well, I think this isn't just a novel. This is doing a service to anyone who will have the pleasure of reading your book. And in my view, certainly some of the world leaders should pick it up and read it quite in depth, because it sounds as though it's full of experiences that have a very strong message underlying, and our leaders around the globe would definitely benefit from hearing your message. So, Daniel, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today.
Likewise, very much. Thank you so much for allowing me to sit and talk with you all. It's lovely.
Well, no, it's been great. I didn't realize it was a trilogy. That's fantastic. And so we really don't know how it ends. So I love it. I'm writing my own book at the moment, and it's going to be, I hope it's going to be a trilogy too. I hope that the publisher will let me do three more.
I'm sure he will.
One thing I need to say is you're an absolute gentleman, Daniel, and hopefully we'll get you back when they have the second book come out. And if with people like you running the US, I think we're in good hands. You've obviously got a good moral compass. You're a sensible sort of person. Just a sort of really good American. My novel about you would be The Good American, not a novel. It would be true.
Thank you very much. That's very kind.
And I love the fact that you came up from the Bronx with a big family. It really is a sort of a really a fantastic American story, not rags and riches. There are more important things than riches, and that's doing a good thing for your country and being a sort of good person and putting your life on the line for the sake of the safety of others, standing on that wall. So it was an absolute pleasure to have you on, and it was a pleasure to have you, Rosie Kelly, filling in and doing such a fantastic job.
Happy to take over
any time. We got to make all the room, man.
She's going to put it out, Daniel. You have to understand that she's much smarter than you or I put together.
I know. They're from a different planet. They come in, act on, take over. But it's a pleasure. She's, I don't mind her taking over, giving the orders. Now my dog says we've had enough. But Daniel, we hope to have you back again. You're an absolute gentleman, a real legend. And thank you for your service, as they say.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. All right. Be well.
And thank you, Rosie.
Thanks, everyone.